I want one breakfast.
Just one?
Just the one breakfast.
Well, I want one too.
Well, can we have it after the show?
Yes.
Is that possible?
Yes.
All right, let's make it happen. You're listening to Casual Wednesdays with Doom Racket. I am your host, Jared Jones. And across the table from me, as always, is the Gamora to my Star-Lord, MJ Kramer.
Oh, goodness.
I know.
I don't know, is that spoilers yet?
Why would that be spoilers? Everyone knows they're together. They were together at the end of Volume 2.
But now, spoilers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, by the way, this is our spoiler discussion for Avengers Infinity War. So if you haven't seen it yet, yeah, come back to this episode when you've seen it.
Yeah.
Because we're going to really, really ruin it for you if MJ hasn't already.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about like every single joke.
We're going to be really short on time, really cramped. So we've compartmentalized our thoughts into 5 talking points for Infinity War. What worked, what didn't. Our favorite moment, our favorite character, and predictions for the future. We'll get into that in just a second, but before we begin, we did want to mention that, yes indeed, Free Comic Book Day is this week.
Saturday.
This Saturday.
May 5th.
That's right. And we're going to be at GMAR Comics here in Chicago, over in Logan Square, all day. That starts at 11 o'clock. It goes on until I think about 8.
All day.
All day. Well, I might duck out early.
Yeah. If you leave early, I don't know. Our friend Pat Look has already seen it 7 times.
Pat is a very devoted fellow.
Well, he is devoted, like his favorite character is Thanos. Like his favorite comic is Infinity Gauntlet. So this is like his bread and butter.
Bless him.
So
bless
him. Good on you, Pat.
Yeah. I did the same thing with The Dark Knight. Within the first week that movie came out, I had seen it, I think, 6 times.
I saw that one a lot, too. That one... I think that's the most I've seen a movie in the theaters other than Titanic.
Mm. The most I've seen any movie is Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace. I saw that 12 times. But in my defense, one, I don't need to defend myself, but what was happening was I was babysitting a kid at the time during the summer, and his mom would just pay me to take him to see Star Wars because uh-huh. that's what he wanted to do. And uh-huh. it was a quick, clean way to kill 3 hours.
Yeah.
Having to engage with him. It was great.
Yeah.
So, yes, Infinity War chat. Let's get down to it. MJ, I want your general feelings on Infinity War. This is practically all we've been talking about since Thursday night. But for the sake of our listeners, what did you think?
Generally liked it.
Generally?
Yeah. I thought that it was paced well for being...
2 hours and 40 minutes long?
Yeah, and for having... pretty much every single character they've introduced over the past 10 years in it.
Mm-hmm.
And for trying to give each of those single characters like at least a little beat. Mm-hmm. I thought it did really well with that. For ending up in a really dark place, I thought it kept the rest a little on the brighter side until they decided to go, you know, whole hog with that midway through Infinity Gauntlet ending.
Again, spoilers throughout the entire episode. Don't even bother jumping ahead. We'll probably end up landing on one spoiler before, even during the sign out at the end of the episode. So keep an ear out.
Yeah, yeah, seriously. What about you? What were the things that you liked?
Generally, I didn't really like it.
I know.
Why is that so disappointing?
I don't understand why you didn't like it.
I think you do.
I mean, I do, but I don't understand why. Well, from what you've told me, it just seems like you're letting your movie critic thoughts kind of get in the way of your comic fan thoughts.
How the hell else am I supposed to watch a movie? I mean, I'll watch movies I don't like all the time. I mean, I watch all these damn Marvel movies all the time. I'm not over the moon for them, but I do watch them again and again and again because they're fun.
I just need to tell listeners that Jared Jones was quoting the trailer to this movie.
Yeah, because I am not impervious to hype. I'm not. Anyone who knew me during the Dark Knight trilogy knows this. Painfully so.
I know it painfully so. Thank you.
Okay, so let's talk about the things that worked for you in this movie. What were a few things, and not vagaries, get into it. What were some of the stuff that you really thought clicked?
They did Doctor Strange well. They did it better than in his own first movie.
Which is really weird.
Yeah, but I think it's because they didn't bother with any origins, any reintroductions. They just, boom, this character's here, doing their thing. In that case, it felt a lot like a comic book.
Yeah.
It felt like a good comic book crossover to me. And I just think it's weird that you don't have that same opinion about it. They did Thor super great.
This was kind of a sequel to Ragnarok in a way, like a direct sequel.
AMC did that big, like, marathon thing.
31-hour marathon.
Yeah, with, like, 10 movies to see before. And Thor Ragnarok wasn't among those movies that they showed before.
That was interesting.
And, like you said, it is literally a direct sequel because that one ends with Thanos' ship in front of the Asgardians. And this starts with that. Mm-hmm. It starts with their, like, distress call with their mating.
I'm going to interject with the thing that didn't work, is that it doesn't do it directly, but rather a few beats go by, and then we jump into it.
Yes, it doesn't show the murdering of all the half of the Asgardians.
Or the disappearance of Valkyrie.
They have said, either the writers or the directors have said that she is not dead.
Yeah, but unless it's in the movie, you don't know that.
Well, we know it because they said it.
You know what? No, absolutely not. Because
does there need to be more runtime on this movie?
I don't need Christopher Nolan explaining the endings of The Dark Knight or The Dark Knight Rises to me. Either it's in the film or it's not. And the Valkyrie disappearance was not in the film. We're meant to infer that she survived. I don't see Valkyrie running away from a fight.
I see her keeping an eye on the remaining Asgardians. Like, they let her live and stay and be in charge of them.
One thing I feel that didn't work for the movie was just Thanos' whole shtug about keeping half of everything alive. It just doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, yes, he's a madman. What he does doesn't have to make sense.
And that was his thing before.
And that's fine. But then it creates a lot of gaps that leave him open to reprisals, leaves him vulnerable. Like, his mercy leads him to almost lose the gauntlet at one point in the film, where everyone, like, dogpiles on him. It's when
fucking Star-Lord messes it up, man.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a bit. Like, with the gauntlet, he's either using the stones or he's just not. He's just hitting people, and it's like, you have the stones. He stops Drax and Mantis cold in their tracks. Turns Mantis into a bunch of ribbons and Drax into a bunch of stones, which is from Infinity Gauntlet. That's good stuff. And he's showing off what Titan looked like before it got destroyed. And then he's showing what he was doing to the Collector when the Guardians show up with the Reality Stone. But other than that, he just kind of blasts people every once in a while.
He uses them to beat everybody up, because you can tell which color he's using as he does it. The Power Stone to throw people around a bunch, because you can tell because it's got, like, the purpliness around. Definitely does that.
But he's powerful on his own. He's formidable on his own without those stones. And they really deviate on how powerful Thanos is at any given point.
Yeah, it does the usual, like he's only as powerful as he needs to be for the scene to make sense.
Dramatically so. They start the movie with him beating the shit out of the Hulk. Like, so bad the Hulk doesn't even want to come out anymore. He's ashamed. He's hiding in Banner, sulking, instead of coming out for the rest of the movie.
I enjoyed that interplay, by the way, between Hulk and Banner. I feel like they did a really great job with the characterization in Thor Ragnarok, mm-hmm. of giving the Hulk himself some actual character to him, yeah. Like a pouty little kid.
Yeah, sure.
And in this one, having him refuse to come out, that interplay between him and Bruce, I thought that really well done.
Ruffalo sold it really well, but not having Hulk there is another gaping problem, because why would the Hulk, petulant child or no, duck out of a fight?
He's a little whiny baby who's not going to come out. Well, he's petulant.
But that's awful. The trailers had the Hulk in there.
That was kind of a lie.
No, Marvel can do whatever they want because they're owned by Disney, and Disney practically owns our souls. It's like, here's what you're not going to get.
But there, and we talked about this before, a couple of the little dialogue sequences they had in the trailer, they used different takes of those.
Yeah.
So, like,
well, that's common.
Yeah.
That doesn't bother me. In the end of the first trailer,
everybody's running and Hulk is in it. Yeah.
And the Hulk's there and it just looks amazing. I'm like, oh, he's going to bust out of that Hulkbuster armor, because everyone knew Banner was in there. Because in the trailers, it's very clear that RDJ and Spidey are up in Titan or some weird
in space.
I didn't appreciate the fibbing. I didn't appreciate them tucking Hulk away because we have a sequel to consider. It's the structure of the MCU that kept me from enjoying it as much. Tonally, it's a complete backpedal from what Thor Ragnarok was. Everyone's telling me to accept the jokes and accept the brevity and accept the silliness of it when they're destroying Asgard and, you know, throwing allegories my way. And I did. I came around to it, and I enjoy Thor Ragnarok, and I think it's a really fun movie.
He just bitches about it all the time.
I bitch a lot. But then in Infinity War, it's this really dark movie. And it's like DC dark in a lot of ways.
I think without the jokes that Thor Ragnarok had, it would have been this dark. Especially with considering
the subject matter.
And how it ended. Like, Thor talks in the movie about, oh yeah, my dad's dead, my brother's dead, and I had to kill my sister and all this stuff. And most of that shit happened in Thor Ragnarok. Mm-hmm. And that would have been a super downer bummer of a movie. And they somehow made it like this romp. I understand the criticism of having it have too much humor in it and not letting the dramatic moments, you know, really have a moment to resonate. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed it, and it was fun. And this one had its fun moments, but you leave the theater and you're not, well, except for the post-credit sequence.
The post-credit sequence is kind of like a palate cleanser. The actual ending itself, I mean, they're probably kids bawling their eyes out.
I was actually just thinking this last night. If anyone, I'm wondering if anyone has taken a child to this.
Mm. You monsters.
Probably the most notable and most like heart-wrenching death is definitely Spider-Man's.
Yeah.
And if you know any children, kids fucking love Spider-Man.
They do.
Like, having worked at comic shops on free comic book days, when you have someone dressed in a Spider-Man costume, you see little children's eyes light up and like run to them with their arms outstretched for a hug.
Because it's
like,
Spidey.
Kids fucking love Spider-Man, and I can't imagine seeing like a little kid having to be sitting next to him while Spider-Man is like, I don't want to go.
Tom Holland sold that.
Oh my God,
scene.
He did
it
so well.
He was so good in it. And this is another thing that took me out of the movie. I'm like, I know there's a Homecoming 2 coming. Like, Michael Keaton's got a beef. He's got to protect his daughter, and he's got to protect Peter for some weird reason, because I guess they got along by the end of the movie. I don't know.
It was a life debt thing, remember?
Something like that. Like, the Scorpion's out for revenge. Yeah. Like, I know that's coming. So it's like, Spider-Man 2 is not going to be about how Peter Parker's coping with how he died that one time. It's just not going to be. He's going to come back. He's not going to remember it happened.
I think the bigger tell is they're not going to get rid of Black Panther, the main character of the movie that just made a fucking $1 billion. Yeah. They're not going to be like, oh, bye. Because someone in our first screening said like, oh, well, there goes his sequel. And it's like, no, dude.
Oh,
you really
sidebar.
Think they're going to do that?
Sidebar. Hey, if you feel like you have something to contribute to a moment in a big budget blockbuster movie that costs like $300 million to make, I got news for you. You don't. Don't talk in the movies.
Most everybody at our screening was okay. There was a lot of laughs, and some of the laughs made me miss the dialogue right after.
Yeah.
The two of us have seen it 2 times now. We went to go see it on Monday night as well. So the second time we saw it was in a smaller theater with like the big cushy chairs. So there's just
seats.
Less people in it. Yeah. And I could catch a lot more of the dialogue because of that, which I appreciated.
There was this one person sitting to your right who, I guess jokes didn't land with her immediately. Because, like, people would chuckle, and then she would go, nah.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, come on. That joke was, like, now 10 seconds ago. Let's go.
I actually did yell the post-credit sequence.
You did. You yelled at somebody. But it was in service to his awareness of what was going
on.
I
was answering the question. I kind of screamed when they showed the little Captain Marvel symbol. Yeah.
See, MJ's jumping ahead. I was going to set the tone. I was going to set the scene. It was going to be great, and you were going to look like a hero, but you just blew it. You're really bad with spoilers, MJ. But yeah,
this is a spoiler everything zone.
This was the post-credit sequence. Nick Fury finally shows up.
Only to fade away.
Only to fade away. Drops his beeper because Captain Marvel will take place in the 90s, and it shows the Captain Marvel symbol, and everyone... I mean, a lot. It was kind of like when Thanos appeared at the end of the first Avengers. People were like, "Ah, what?"
Yeah.
And one guy was actually like, "Okay, now somebody has to tell me who that is."
It was like, "Hey, everybody, you yelled. Who was that?" And I had been one of the people who had shrieked. Yeah.
And then MJ turns to him, rather gallantly, flaming red hair everywhere, and she goes, "That's Captain Motherfucking Marvel."
That's what I said.
That's what you said.
Except I yelled it,
and it was great.
He yelled it really loud.
Because I mean, if he didn't know, now he knew.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about our favorite characters in this movie. I like Doctor Strange. To me, he's the best character as far as superheroes are concerned. A lot of characters got short shrifts in the movie. Everyone's talking about the big achievement that all these characters were so well balanced, but they were not. Captain America, who we haven't seen since he... flipped off the government at the end of Civil War and sprung a bunch of people. Now they have this, like, Black Ops Secret Avengers thing going on. Gets, like, maybe 5 minutes of screen time, and he's often doing it in service to what's going on the screen as opposed to what's going on up here.
It definitely feels like, except for Thor, the characters that got lots of screen time in this movie.
And Iron Man.
And Iron Man, except for Thor and Iron Man. They seem to be the ones that aren't going to probably be showing up for most of the next movie, considering how this one ended. So I think they're saving characters like Captain America. Spider-Man got a lot of time too. For the next movie, so that like they'll have time to shine in that one. Somebody even said in like the big comments thing on my post about it that they've already said that Widow and Cap are going to have their big moments in Avengers 4.
Great. So you just have to wait another year after I've always seen. Who's your favorite character?
Thor.
Thor.
I love him.
He got his eyeball back, kind of.
I love him. His interactions with Rocket.
Those are great.
Were fucking fantastic.
Those are really great. Chris Hemsworth's become quite the actor.
Yeah. No, he's really good. And like, as we all found out in Ghostbusters, he's got amazing comedic timing. And in Ragnarok too. Because I think they realized that after Ghostbusters, like, hey, this dude can really land a joke. He's immensely funny with the Guardians cast. Him and Chris Pratt, who I have slowly grown like to dislike the Guardians movies after the past few years. And man, I hate Star-Lord now.
You hate him now?
Yeah. Just growing. And now after this movie.
He's a very toxic boy.
Well, a lot of people are like, well, it doesn't seem like it's in character for him to do what he did and like just decide he's going to fuck up the big plan just because he got upset.
That's true.
It's totally in his character to do that.
He would totally louse it up in some way and being caught up in the emotions because Gamora is now dead.
Yeah. And like he did a super similar thing in Guardians 2 when he found out that that his mom had been killed by his dad. He just blows up and kind of puts everybody in danger.
Yeah.
Because he's kind of he's an immature shit.
He never grew past 14.
Yeah.
He grew up with the Ravagers. I mean, this kid's a kid. He listens to the same 12 songs ad infinitum, is also trying to be a grown-up at the same time and failing miserably because he never had an appropriate father figure. That's what Volume 2 is all about.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it makes sense for Anubis to be such an asshole, but also that's he's an asshole.
That was a tough scene to watch. I mean, okay, my favorite character is Thanos. That's the part of the movie that worked for me. Without a doubt, he's the best Marvel villain we've ever had. Which is crazy to think about.
I just want to mention Loki and pour a little drink out for him.
Nah.
I love him.
Loki stuck around 2 movies too many. He died in...
He
died in Thor the Dark Thor, as far as I'm concerned.
You shut up.
And he's probably a Secret Skrull anyway. It doesn't matter.
I'm mad at you for saying that, Jared.
Come on. What did he do in Ragnarok? They had one moment in an elevator.
He was good in Ragnarok. I don't want to hear a word about it. Although I think they have turned him into too much of a good guy now.
Yeah.
He should be a little bit more chaotic neutral. But I guess he had to be for Thanos to want to kill him. So that's why they did it. And that was one part that didn't seem to work for me because I didn't think that was in character for him to just be.
Thanos was going to kill Loki no matter what. He had had dealings with him. That's what the first Avengers movie was all about.
I just wish there wouldn't have been 3 attempts by Loki in that thing to try and be the good guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's just not him.
Loki went out, and he went out kind of like a chump. I mean, this is a death that is not glamorous in any way. His death in Thor the Dark World was because he sacrificed himself to save his brother.
Yeah. Well, his death is in service to Thor in this movie. So, I mean, one could say that he was fridged in this movie. He died to further Thor's storyline.
I feel like when Thanos walks into a room, someone's going to go. He doesn't strike me as the type of person who necessarily enjoys killing people, but he does strike me as the type of guy who's very efficient at it. He's got the most complexity of any villain I know of in any of these MCU movies, with the exception of Loki, I suppose. The last shot is a stunner because we feel like we've gone on a journey with this guy. Like, he got what he wants, he's sitting in his farm, he's going to watch the sun rise on a grateful universe, perfectly balanced, as it should be. No matter how idiotic the whole concept of half a living universe is. You got Infinity Stones, just create enough resources for everybody. If that's what you're worried about, if we have finite resources and way too many people going around, you have the means of production. Seize it, my friend.
Maybe he didn't want to upset the cosmic scales that much. He just wanted to turn them in the other direction.
Yeah, I don't think he knows what he wanted. I think he had an idea and just went with it.
Speaking of fridging, another notable death that was separate from all the deaths at the end was Gamora, who definitely dies to serve another storyline. If anybody stays dead, I don't necessarily think that she's gonna.
I think people who died outside of the finger snap are gonna stay dead. Like, Heimdall's not coming back. Talk about a chump death.
I can see Heimdall not coming back. Heimdall saved everybody's ass, man.
How?
Because he sent the Hulk back to get everybody else to let them know what was going on.
And then the Hulk didn't do anything.
But he let them know what was happening, got everybody slightly prepared at least so they knew what was going on, and told them about Thanos. They wouldn't have known who Thanos was if he hadn't done that.
All that happened was that they got Iron Man on board.
And Doctor Strange.
But I feel like once that flying donut over Bleecker Street to get pick up Doc Strange.
But they wouldn't have known what they were coming for.
Spider-Man went straight for it when he saw it. Iron Man would have too. It would have been an all-hands-on-deck thing. Hulk showing up was not necessary, and it didn't serve anything.
He served to tell everybody what happened. It was important.
All
he
I'm
was
saying
a newsbringer.
With these dumb movies is that they start falling apart the second you think about them, and this one especially.
I don't think that one falls apart there. I think Gamora is probably alive inside the Soul Stone, especially considering the last time we see her after he does the finger snap, and she's little girl Gamora again, and it looks like the inside of the Soul Stone. And
it's very amber.
And Thanos isn't wearing the glove.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think is going on.
Yeah.
And that's how Infinity Gauntlet starts, is her and Adam Warlock and Pip the Troll are inside the Soul Stone. So, I mean, considering how they pick little plot points the way that they do and transfer them from the comics to the movies, it would make sense for that to happen somehow.
And we also know there's Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 on the way.
Yeah.
So I doubt it's going to be about Peter Quill being sad about his girlfriend being dead.
Well, I mean, all of them except Rocket faded away into ash. That's the biggest tell out of anything, but oh, that's probably not going to stick.
He lost his brand new best friend, Bucky.
Yeah.
Rocket and Bucky.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
The friendship that'll last forever.
Although I wish that would have gotten a little more time, but I all the little moments in that battle scene worked really well. Like the little moments between Cap and Thor, when they were like complimenting each other's beards, which was amazing.
The whole thing reminds me of Return of the King.
I can see that.
The whole sequence, that in episode one.
But the part when Proxima Midnight is telling Scarlet Witch that she's gonna die alone, and then Black Widow's like, she's not alone, and her and Okoye are like, you know, right there, and it made me really happy. It was a cool moment.
Yeah, it has a lot of cool moments.
There was a lot of cool shit in this movie. And yes, a lot of it was fan service, I admit it. Just surprised that it didn't work on you the way it works on me.
Thanos worked on me because he had a story. No one else. I mean, Thor had a story. That's why his arc worked too. But that's it.
I wish Thanos would have been less sympathetic. I don't necessarily want to be sympathetic to my villain.
I wanted Thanos to be that like mad Titan nihilist that we get in the comics. I wanted the Donny Cates Thanos. I knew that wasn't going to happen. They made him the kind of character that you understood even if you hated yourself for understanding him. Which I appreciated.
Well, they couldn't keep it how it was in Infinity Gauntlet, as much as they pulled a lot from that. Because he's just doing it to impress a girl, and the girl being Death.
I honestly thought Hela was going to be in this because of that.
I mean, maybe she'll show up in the next one.
Could be. Although she is the goddess of death in these movies.
She did seem like she died, but who knows? Maybe she's not dead.
All right, we got to do predictions, then we got to move on to the top five. Predictions for the next movie, what do you got?
Probably just more similarities to Infinity Gauntlet.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to come back. Because in Infinity Gauntlet, Nebula ends up getting the glove, switches everything back. And then I don't necessarily think Adam Warlock's going to come in and take the gauntlet into his safekeeping.
He could pop out of that sarcophagus at any minute.
I feel like they're going to want to give him more of an intro than just that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll see him like in the next Guardians movie.
Sure.
Or maybe see him a little bit. Yeah. But the person that I know we're going to see is Captain Motherfucking Marvel.
Yep, Captain Marvel's going to be there for sure. We get Captain Marvel the movie before Infinity War Part 2.
Yes, which is going to take place in the 90s.
Yes.
Super exciting.
I want Howard the Duck in one of these movies. I mean, it'd be fine if he was just in Guardians 3, but it'd be cool if he showed up.
I want to see more of Thor being awesome, because Thor getting Stormbreaker, which is Beta Ray Bill's hammer, which is fucking great.
But I'm sad
we still haven't seen Beta Ray Bill. But him getting that hammer was the highlight of the movie for me. And the scenes right after of him just kicking total ass.
What'd you think about Peter Dinklage then in that sequence?
I didn't love Peter Dinklage in that. It seemed like he's kind of phoning it in.
I think he tries. I just think his phony English accent sucks.
It's funny that he has gotten such accolades for his part in Game of Thrones while using that awful, awful accent he has.
There are moments where it works.
Yeah.
Like when you have Lena Headey looking at you like you're an asshole the entire time.
Yeah.
It's effective.
Yeah, but it didn't work in this one.
I forget what he said, but there's like this one line he delivers that is just painful to listen to, and people were laughing in the audience. I just felt sorry for him.
I thought the Red Skull showing up was done really well, and it was something I was legitimately surprised about.
I was very pleased. I wanted to see the Red Skull again because I think it would tie everything back to Phase 1 in a very wonderful way.
And I think it did.
And I think because they couldn't get Hugo Weaving back because he just didn't want to do it, I think that they utilized their resources magnificently. They were like, okay, he'll be CG, we'll get rid of his feet, and we'll get Ross Marquand, who can mimic practically anybody on the planet, because I was really fooled. I really thought that was Hugo Weaving for a minute there.
I assumed it wasn't because I remember him saying that he was never going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Hugo Weaving, the one man to defy Disney, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Good for him.
Clearly, we have a lot to say about Infinity War. What did you think about it? Share your comments with us on the internet. In the meantime, we have a spoiler-free review over on DuneMarket.com. Check that out. Hey, MJ, we gotta do the top five.
Yes.
All right, let's do it. We're gonna have you start us off. What do you got for us?
All right, well, this first one, it kind of ties in Infinity War and, like, I don't know, in my own personal opinion, just because I have been trying to reread some of Jonathan Hickman's Avengers, New Avengers, mm-hmm. leading up to Infinity.
Same.
Because they pulled a lot of stuff from that for Infinity War. This week, Marvel has republished the first four issues of the second S.H.I.E.L.D. series that he was writing because it never got finished. Mm-hmm. But they're going to be finally finishing it. So they're publishing this little oversized thing that has the first four issues of that second series.
That's smart.
Of S.H.I.E.L.D., the awesome series he did with Dustin Weaver from like 5 years ago, 6 years ago? Super long time ago that just has been languishing in unfinished land. but that is out this week. They're calling it S.H.I.E.L.D. The Rebirth. It is $6 for four issues.
That's good.
Super awesome, great stuff. If you ever wanted to see the Marvel Universe versions of Leonardo da Vinci and Newton and Michelangelo and all this awesome, crazy shit, S.H.I.E.L.D. throughout the ages. It's real cool, and I'm excited to see more of Jonathan Hickman's really awesome Marvel stuff. You know, see it back in my hands. What's your first one for the week?
My first one's a debut. Death or Glory, number one by Image Comics. Written by Rick Remender, art by Bengal, letters by Russ Rutan. This book looks gorgeous. Anxious to see Bengal's interiors, flipping through them. It does not disappoint. He does his own colors, too, and it looks very rich. This looks like a wonderfully realized world, and it's written by Remender, whose Image stuff is amazing. I enjoy it more than his Marvel stuff. Death or Glory is definitely one of the first books I'll be reading this week. MJ, what's next?
My next one is another Marvel book. It's probably the biggest release this week, Avengers number one. Written by Mr. Jason Aaron, my fave, with art by Ed McGuinness, inks by Mark Morales, colors by David Curiel, letters by Corey Pettit. I'm super stoked about this. This is kind of bringing the Avengers back to their main, you know, archetypical lineup.
It reminds me of a JLA launch.
Yeah, it does seem like that. The book, I already read it. The book does a really great job of kind of having, like the movie does, of having everybody kind of doing separate things. It seemed like they're going to coalesce into one bigger thing later. Mm-hmm. Aaron and McGuinness work well, really well together. It's like the first time in a super long time, there's only been one Avengers book.
Which is great.
Yeah. And it's expensive. It's $4.99, but it is longer than normal. So, like, at least you're getting money's worth here. I enjoyed it a lot. Avengers number one. What's your next one?
Next one is from Silver Sprocket. Dayglow A-hole,
number one. You just wanted to say that.
It's just fun to say. it's by cartoonist Ben Passmore. Silver Sprocket is a publisher that we really, really like. Ben Passmore's stuff. Ben Passmore is a cartoonist that needs no introduction. I'll give him a little one anyway. He has a wonderful stripped-down cartoonist aesthetic, but he utilizes colors in a very wonderful way. Dayglow A-hole definitely lives up to its name in terms of aesthetic. It's scuzzy. It's got Easter egg pastel colors to it. It looks absolutely wonderful, and I can't wait to read it. Dayglow A-hole number one is next for me. MJ, what's next for you?
I have another Marvel book.
Yeah, well,
I don't know. I guess I'm just in a Marvel-y mood.
That's fine.
Forgive me.
It's fine.
This next one is You Are Deadpool, which is written by Ella Ewing, with art by Selva Espin, colors by Guru FX, letters by Joe Sabino. I'm not usually a Deadpool person.
Nope.
I'm looking forward to the Deadpool sequel as much as every other movie-going human. I don't read the Deadpool comics really at all.
Mm-hmm.
And this is part one of either a 4 or 5 miniseries.
I think it's 5.
It's going to be coming out weekly. It is a choose-your-own-adventure Deadpool comic.
How are they going to do that in a comic book?
I am super excited to find out. I like Al Ewing's work on all of his other Marvel properties, and I think that he gets kind of properties that are hard to make really successful sometimes. Mm-hmm. I hope this one does well, because it looks really fun. You are Deadpool number one.
That will be reviewed by Don Alsafi for the Building a Better Marvel feature on Doom Rocket. Next week, the first 2 issues are getting a full review treatment.
Awesome. What's your next one, Jones?
Well, I'll see your 2 Marvels and I'll raise you a DC.
Oh, of course.
Of course. Mine is Nightwing number 44, written by Benjamin Percy, who kicks off his new arc starting with this issue. Art by Chris Mooneyham. Hope I said that right. Seems right.
I think that's right.
Nick Filardi on colors and Carlos M. Manguel on letters. This arc is called The Bleeding Edge. It looks like it's getting back down to its gritty Chuck Dixon crime roots.
Mm.
I love the Sam Humphries, Bernard Chang arc. I love just the bright colors. I love the larger-than-life villain. I thought it really fit Nightwing. I have to remember that this guy is a vigilante who grew up in Gotham, and every once in a while he has to go kick somebody in the face who's holding the gun. So that's what we're back to, it looks like. I'm excited about it. Nightwing number 44, my next pick. MJ, what's next for you?
My next one is also a DC book. So there, Jared.
No.
And this is a very atypical DC book. This is DC Nation number 0.
Number 0.
It is a quarter, and it contains 3 different stories. This is pretty much DC's free comic book day book. It has a Joker-Batman story that's going to be leading into the
wedding.
The Batman-Catwoman wedding by Tom King and Clay Mann. It has a Superman story that's going to be leading into Bendis's Man of Steel that is written by Bendis, drawn by Jose Luis García López.
Which is huge.
Oh my goodness, it looks so pretty. And inked by Dexter Fiennes. And then it has a JLA story that is co-written by the 3 writers that are going to be doing the JLA books, which is Scott Snyder, James Tynan, and Josh Williamson, with art by Jorge Jimenez. It's really well done. Like, these are really good stories.
We'll talk more about that right after the top 5.
Yeah, I think the Batman one is really going to be a hit with people. Clayman's art is gorgeous. He just gets better and better. On Free Comic Book Day, go and get this book. If your store's not giving it out for free, it's only a fucking quarter. So
quarter.
Get that shit. What's your next one, Jones?
My next one is from Dynamite, Sherlock Holmes, The Vanishing Man. I feel like this should have been Sherlock Holmes and the Case of the Vanishing Man. What was the problem?
That would work. Maybe they just wanted to shorten it to fit in, like, Diamond's list title listings.
I feel like there are too many colons used in comic books these days. Far too many colons. Written by Leah Moore and John Repien. Art by Julius Ota. Colors by Ellie Wright. Letters by Simon Boland. I'm a big Sherlock Holmes fan. I enjoy stories in any medium.
You even have little radio shows of them.
I have little radio show tapes that I like to listen to every once in a while with Basil Rathbone.
Yes.
Yes. I've already read it. I enjoyed it. It's got a couple of plot twists in it that are both predictable and sad.
Aww.
But the mystery itself has me intrigued, so I'm going to keep reading it. It's only a few issues, so Sherlock Holmes, The Vanishing Man. Sorry it's not a ringing endorsement, but I would spoil it because I'm kind of pissed about the ending, but it's fine. Everything's fine. I'm not mad. MJ, what's next for you?
My next one is a Boom book. It's a debut called Coda Number 1.
Coda Number 1. A lot of heat around this book.
It's a new one by Cy Spurrier. Yeah. Simon Spurrier has done a couple sort of fantasy-ish books like this for Boom. And this one looks beautiful. The art is by one Matias Bergara. Color assists by Michael Doig and letter by Colin Bell. It's just a... I think they say somewhere in here high fantasy with a little like lowbrowness to it. I can see that. It's very cool. I read it. I really enjoyed it. It's also an oversized issue, and yet still only $3.99.
Yeah.
It's really cool. It's really, really, really pretty. The dialogue is very, very British, which I enjoy.
Hmm.
But, you know, it's an English dude writing it, so it should be. I liked it a lot. Go check out Coda. From Boom. What's your last one, Jared?
My last pick is Giant Days number 38.
Another Boom book.
Another Boom book. Good for Boom. Written by John Allison. Art by Julia Madrigal.
Oh.
Yeah. No Max Sarin this month. Colors by Whitney Kogar. Letters by Jim Campbell. I threw Giant Days in because I'd be damned if I was going to do a quarter book that everyone's going to buy anyway, or the damn Avengers book that everyone's going to buy because of a damn movie.
Oh, well.
And the thing about having a fill-in artist is that they're going to do their best Max Sarin impersonation, which I guess is fine because Max Sarin at one point was doing a Lucy Treman impersonation. I'm not mad about it. I'm not pumped about it either, but I'll still read it. It's Giant Days.
That cover has me nervous.
Yeah, a lot of the covers have been implying that they're going to bust up his friends. Well, I mean, Giant Days is not going to last forever. They're going to end this book eventually.
I don't want it to end with them not being friends. Okay.
That's not going to happen. Or maybe, okay. Or maybe they'll do like a Shawshank Redemption thing where they'll meet up on a beach later on and hug it out or something. Who knows?
They better. Or I'm coming for you, John Allison.
Giant Days number 38. My last pick this week. Anyway, we got one more thing to talk about. So you want to get to it?
Sure.
Let's get to it. And of course, I should probably mention a spoiler warning for DC Nation number 0 going ahead. All right, MJ, let's do it.
God, we don't have much time.
We don't have much time at all. But let's break it down. We got three stories, like you said. Tom King, Clay Mann, Bendis, Garcia Lopez, and then Snyder.
Williamson and Tynan and Jorge Jimenez.
That's right. All kicking off the three major events that DC is going to have this summer.
Many of which are obnoxiously weekly.
We've got the Prelude to the Wedding Batman series coming out, all written by Tim Seeley,
yeah,
I think.
Those are a bunch of one-shots, yeah.
Then we got the wedding itself, Man of Steel number 1 kicking off May 30th, which is going to be a weekly series, 6 issues long, with some of the greatest artists working today. Conspicuously, none of them are women, but it's whatever. I'm not surprised.
No, I'm not either, but you know.
And then, of course, the No Justice, Justice League mega arc.
Well, there's going to be 4 issues of that weekly, and then there's going to be like 3 different Justice League series coming out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Each one written by one of the dudes who co-wrote this.
So while Marvel's tightening their belt on their Avengers franchise, DC, I guess, is filling up at the buffet table.
Yeah.
I'm of two minds on that. One, love Justice League. Two, holy crap, I'm not buying all those books. There's just no way.
We'll see. We'll see how they suss out.
I'm optimistic. The story in DC Nation has me optimistic.
See, I didn't like it as much. I thought it was too crammed.
I'm just saying, I'm optimistic. It could have been a trash fire, and it wasn't.
Okay.
So I'm grateful for that.
Okay.
I don't know why everyone's got glowing orbs. I guess that's just how they commune or get around.
Yeah, I guess.
Because they're on the planet Call You.
Yes.
Brainiac's homeworld.
Yeah, saving Brainiac something. Yeah, I don't know.
It seems like it's going to be a lot of, we got to do this thing to make sure that this thing happens, but if I do this thing, something really bad's going to happen to me, and it's like, just a lot of that in Snyder's mega events.
Yeah.
And I don't know how Snyder's keeping it up. Admire Snyder's stamina. After Metal, he jumped right into this, so good for him. The story of Man of Steel kind of annoyed me a little bit, because it finally introduces a major black character into the Daily Planet bullpen, and bum, bum, bum. She might be evil.
Yeah.
So that's a little disappointing.
That in addition to Lois not working for the planet.
What the fuck is that about?
And she's apparently like writing a novel or something.
So she's doing what Clark Kent was doing in the 90s when he wasn't working for the Daily Planet for a short period of time. And he was writing a novel called Under a Yellow Sun or something like that, where he was fighting terrorists or something. It's just,
I mean, Bendis has a pretty good track record for writing ladies. So I'm not super worried, but I'm a little worried.
I'm worried. She's not in it. I was looking forward to seeing what he was going to do with Lois Lane, and it didn't deliver. And I'm getting the sinking suspicion she may not be a major character in Man of Steel.
No, he's mentioned that he really likes writing her and John both. So
yeah, but people read that solicit material without thinking that they were breaking up the marriage and John was going away. So Bendis said that to assuage fears. I'm still worried. We'll see how that pans out when the comic comes out. But then, we gotta talk about the elephant in the room, the Joker story. Now, this is the DC Free Comic Book Day book, as you said, or it was supposed to be, anyway.
Well, it pretty much is. They also have, DC always does, like, sort of the, you know, adult one and then the kids one. They have the kids one out. It's a DC Superhero Girls book.
Mm-hmm.
It's what they've done for the past couple of years. But, yeah, this the Joker story ends with him shooting dude in the head.
Right in the head.
Like, not on screen, but you see the blood.
Dude is sitting right next to the Joker for, like, all afternoon.
Yeah, no, they're chatting the whole time.
And it's a typical Tom King thing where, like, he doesn't deal with the nitty-gritty. He just gives us vignettes. He tells the story like you would tell a joke. And it's structured pretty well in that regard.
Yeah.
But it's kind of dreamlike in a way where, like, it keeps doing the later caption.
Mm-hmm.
So we're meant to believe that this guy, I think his name is Roger or Robert, sitting with the Joker all afternoon waiting for a letter to arrive. It finally arrives. It is what the Joker expected. Except it's totally not. And then he shoots Roger in the head, and that's your story.
It's kind of upsetting. I mean, it's typical for the Joker, but I don't know. It seems like a Seems very graphic for what is equivalent to one's free comic book day book.
I remember the C2E2 Batman panel and Tom King hyping up the story, and we got to look at those Clayman sequentials, and they looked gorgeous. I think he's becoming my favorite Joker artist, actually.
His stuff has just been super pretty.
His facial expressions were killer. The first page is the Joker peeking through a mail slot, which was hilarious. Mm-hmm. I loved it to pieces. But overall, what would you grade DC Nation number zero?
I mean, it was done. It was well done. Well done. Like, it's a B for me.
It's a B? I give it a B, too. Since when are we doing letter grades?
I don't know. I just said B. Well, that's fine.
I'm not mad. All right, every week, we take to social media to ask you guys a question on our minds. And this week's question, what did you guys think about Infinity War? Give us your capsule review. We asked, you answered. MJ, take it away.
Well, Seth Tucker on Facebook said, just about perfect, except Cap, whom they have never quite got right anyhow.
Over on Twitter, Clyde Hall at CJHall1984 said, it's a spectacle film where the heart of the story is always at risk of being lost in the fireworks. The Russos balanced that scope with what made us care about the characters in the first place, all while adding depth. Thanos.
Josh Campa on Facebook said, Thor cements himself as the mightiest and most amazing Avenger. Cap ends up being one note, which is a damn shame.
Michael Mulcher on Facebook said, Brill. And I had to look up what the hell Brill meant.
It's a shortened of brilliant.
That's what it means. At first, I was like, a European flatfish that resembles a turbot? Mulcher, what are you talking about?
Raven Smith on Facebook says, if you're someone that really dislikes event titles in your comics, you're probably not going to like this movie.
Ian McGinty on Facebook said, it was very fun and probably the most well-fleshed-out villain in the MCU history, but floundered in a couple of the characters' actions, Star-Lord.
Nate Bechtel on Facebook says, super emotional up and down time. Think the ending was very effective, but already knowing the possible future of the MCU took away a lot of the oomph.
Back on Twitter, Aaron J. Amendola at I'm Aaron J. said, sixth best MCU movie. Pure fan service wrapped in a Roman tragedy. Not nearly enough Cap, but we know they're saving it for the fourth outing.
And Megan Ray Jordan on Facebook says it will have more of an impact on fans of the MCU than longer time fans of comics. I don't generally separate the two because I don't care, but I think it's accurate for this movie. For folks who have seen their faves come and go 100 times, it's not as much of an emotional impact.
Emmett O. Kuwana at Emmett OC _ said, what I liked about it was the film conveyed that sense of pleasure from poring over two-page George Perez spread of countless superheroes, even though they didn't all meet.
And Michi Trota on Facebook says, entertained but not emotionally engaged. It's too obvious how things will go in Avengers 4 for me to feel any high stakes.
And finally, Pat Loika said, it was the greatest thing I've ever seen, but I'm biased. We love you, Pat. That's great. That's it. That's all the time we have for this installment of Casual Wednesdays. Need more of this dweeby little podcast in your life? Check out our 55-episode archive over on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and subscribe, tell us how we're doing, or search Casual Wednesdays over at DoomRocket.com. New episodes every Wednesday afternoon, except for next week, MJ and I are taking a week off, because MJ's going out of town!
I am.
You are. I'll miss you. And we'll be working at this year's Free Comic Book Day at GMAR Comics here in Chicago. That address, 2641 North Kedzie Avenue in Logan Square. Hope to see you guys out. But if we do end up missing you, look us up on Twitter. I'm at JaredJones_. MJ, where can they find you?
At MollyJane_K.
And so that's it. I don't have a joke to fill in here, so I remain Jared. That's MJ over there.
Hello.
Hello. And from all of us here at DoomRocket.com, have an infinite new comic book day.